You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Professor Jim Fetcher. Professor Fetcher, thanks for joining us today.
My great pleasure, Dave.
Since we know each other fairly well, I assume it would be okay if I refer to you as Jim.
Of course.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Now, we've spoke plenty of times before. We've actually met in person, which I usually don't have the great privilege of meeting some of the folks who have been involved in the truth movement. But I did meet you out in Sandy Hook in May. I believe that was in 2014, I think.
That sounds right. When Wolfgang and I went there to meet with the Newtown School Board to visit the United Way of Northwestern Connecticut, the firehouse, the Newtown Police Department, the location where the school had been, and then met with the school board.
Right. A lot has happened between the beginning of May 2014 and actually it's the anniversary of the JFK assassination, which you've done so much work on, exposing many of these lies that have been introduced by powers that be. Now it's November 22nd, 2015. You had put out a book recently. Actually, it was a month ago. I read on one of your sites. It was actually approved by CreateSpace on October 22nd of 2015, which is exactly a month ago, and it was selling. Everything was fine, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. Why don't you let the listeners know a little bit about the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which, of course, now is being offered for free, I believe, as in PDF format. Let them know about that book, what it entails, and then let the listeners know about what happened with Amazon, not just here in the United States, but also Amazon Canada.
Well, it's a rather powerful indictment of the Obama administration and a whole host of other figures at the local and state level who were involved in a gigantic scam by conducting a drill on one day and then going live the next. These were the 13th and the 14th of December 2012. Where I brought together a dozen experts, including a half a dozen PhDs who are current or retired college professors, and a half a dozen others whose work is featured here, including Sophia Smallstorm, who, of course, produced Unraveling Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 dimensions. Paul Preston, who is a Los Angeles school safety expert, who was so troubled by what he saw in the reporting of Sandy Hook that he reached out to his contacts in the Obama administration and the Department of Education, all of whom confirmed to him that it had been a drill, that no children had died, and that it was done to promote gun control. And Wolfgang Halbig, of course, who's been a complete sensation, a bulldog in pursuing the truth about Sandy Hook. He himself is a former Florida State Trooper, a former U.S. Customs agent. He's a long history in school administration, including as a principal. He is a nationally recognized school safety expert. And Dave Wolfgang began making inquiries because he wanted to learn what happened so he could advise other school districts about how to avoid it. But he found that his FOIA requests were not being answered, his phone calls weren't being returned, and before he knew it, there were two detectives from a local district on his doorstep in his gated community who announced they were there on behalf of the Connecticut State Police and that if he continued to ask questions about Sandy Hook, they would have him arrested and prosecuted, which, of course, is simply absurd on its face. That was the wrong thing to say to Wolfgang, who dug in like a bulldog. And he's been very persistent. I admire the man beyond words. You can find his website at sandyhookjustice.com. But the book does a devastating job of demonstrating it was a complete fraud. When you understand it's a two-day exercise, it's much easier to understand why proof that it was a drill was right before our eyes. The sign, everyone must check in, boxes of bottled water and pizza cartons, porta potties, present from scratch, many wearing name tags on lanyards, parents bringing children to the scene. David, can you imagine a parent bringing a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre if that had been what was going on? They brought the child to the scene because it was the rehearsal. It was like a festive occasion, free water, pizza, porta potties, the whole bit. And the following day, when it went live, there were many signs that this was not a bona fide emergency. No surge of EMTs into the building. No medevac helicopter was called. No string of ambulances to the school. No evacuation of 469 other students. No bodies placed on triage tarps. I mean, the whole situation is completely ridiculous. The parents were not even allowed to see the bodies of their children. Now, David, I'm a parent, and if one of my children had died in a shooting or whatever, there's no force on earth that it could kept me from seeing their bodies. We have a mountain of additional proof. But the fact of the matter is that many of those participating were confused about the difference between the rehearsal on the 13th and going live on the 14th. so that a whole lot of donation sites for the families who were the survivors of victims of Sandy Hook went up on the 13th, a day early. And even Adam Lanza, the alleged shooter, whom we believe is in fact a fictional character, was reported to have died on the 13th in the Social Security Death Index, which would have made it quite miraculous for him to have murdered his mother, 20 children, and 6 more adults the following day.
Little fishy there with all of these parents not breaking down the barricades or the doors to the school to grab their children and hug them. It seems a little odd. And of course, we spent several days there in Sandy Hook just milling about and doing what we were doing. And I sensed something very odd about that whole town. I don't know if you felt the same.
Oh, I did feel the same. And in fact, we have discovered the school was in a dilapidated condition. It was clearly not an operating school. It had been closed by 2008. Externally, it was covered with moss and weeds, and there were even cracks in the walls that hadn't been made current with Americans for Disability Act requirements that would have clicked in around 2007, 2008. You did not have the familiar painted parking areas and signage in blue and white, or exits that are, you know, wooden staircases that aren't wheelchair accessible. One has a steel tube pipe sticking out that would have been very easy for a child to lose an eye. No parent, no principal could have taken any pride in this school. And yet, while we were there in Sandy Hook, we discovered it was a very upscale community. We visited a soccer field, David. If you recall, every blade of grass was carefully manicured. This school was suffering from all kinds of damage, apparent from past hurricanes. And indeed, when it came time after the event to determine whether to refurbish the school or to tear it down and build a new one, the Newtown Bee published an article explaining that it would be very difficult to refurbish because it was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards, which, David, I'm quite confident they knew back in 2007 when they decided to close the school.
What gave you the idea to put the book together, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook?
Oh, well, I have a dear friend by the name of Mike Palachek, who has published quite a few books of his own, and he wanted to create a series under the heading of Save the World, Resist the Empire, which sounds highly idealistic. He'd actually done a book entitled The Dynamic Duo about me and Kevin Barrett, with whom I today do False Flag Weekly News, but then was on Genesis Radio doing a show called The Dynamic Duo, where I was offered a five-day-a-week program. I wanted to do Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, so I offered Kevin Monday and Friday, and for a year and a half, we did the Dynamic Duo, and it was extremely successful, and it was one of many efforts that Kevin and I individually have done, as well, you know, as other efforts in collaboration, including today, the False Flag Weekly News. But Mike was taken with our efforts and likened us to the White Rose, which was a student society that was resisting the Third Reich way back when, which was immensely flattering to me. He produced this enormous book. I mean, it's like, I don't know, 10 by 12 and about 500 pages thick, which had a whole lot of biographical information about us, autobiographical comments, contributions from former friends and colleagues, a whole host of our articles published up to that point, about some about Sandy Hook, some about the Boston bombing. And really voluminous. Within a year later, Mike was suggesting we ought to do a book about Sandy Hook per se, and he proposed the title Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which is such a concise encapsulation of what's going on here. And because I have a vast amount of editorial experience, I was the obvious person to edit the book. I've been in contact with many other students of Sandy Hook. I had already published 30 articles of my own about the subject, and I went about bringing together a simply stellar group of contributors, including Vivian Lee, PhD. She's a professor at an Eastern university who undertook the revision of an article that was a bit of a classic entitled Top 10 Reasons Sandy Hook Was an Elaborate Hoax, where Sophia and James Tracy and I, among others, had contributed to it, but she overhauled it for publication in a new revised version. Sterling Harwood, JD, PhD, he teaches at a college out in California, but he's also a practicing attorney, which makes him an especially interesting fellow. And he did a brilliant piece on Snopes, which is supposed to be a debunking website, and demonstrated that they really didn't know what they were talking about when it came to Sandy Hook. Dr. Eelwood, PhD, she's a West Coast professor emeritus who runs a website called Fellowship of the Minds. And while I thought I was doing well with 30 articles, she's published over 80.
Wow.
Wow. About Sandy Hook. Nick Kohlerstrom, PhD. Nick had been a contributor to the earlier book Mike and I published before we got the Sandy Hook book into print. We'd intended that it should follow after the Sandy Hook book and was entitled, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, because once you've been told nobody died at Sandy Hook, it's a natural question, right? And I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. But we had an interruption in our progress in getting the Sandy Hook book into print so that the moon book was published first. And I think actually it was fortuitous, because by the time I re-edited the moon book, I had a whole lot more and better proof to include, especially what you find in chapter 7 and 8, because a fellow from Australia by the name of Alan William Powell came into possession of hundreds of photographs that had been taken to document the preparation of the drill that were leaked to him by an inside source that I gather just was sick of the hypocrisy. And I featured him on my Real Deal video show several times about it. When I was putting together the book, he and I worked together and figured out 50 photographs to document the furnishing of the Autumn Lonza home as a prop, and then another 50 for refurbishing the school to serve as the stage, which are chapters 7 and 8 in the book that include some of the most damning proof you could possibly have. Dennis Camino, who's longtime military with intelligence experience, authored a book about the nexus of tyranny discussing Tucson, Aurora, and Sandy Hook, which I regard as a bit of a classic. And because Dennis is an electronics expert, when he began looking into Sandy Hook, he discerned rather rapidly that the Connecticut State Emergency Network had been taken over that morning, apparently by FEMA or Homeland Security, to make sure there would be no interruption with the operation they were conducting. And that's a stunning whole additional new line of proof about the faking of the event. James Tracy, PhD, is an associate professor at Florida Atlantic University. He's in the Department of Communications and has courses on the coverage by the media of conspiracy theories. He was perhaps the first to author a scholarly article, in this instance about Wayne Carver, the medical examiner, in relation to his press conference held the day of the 14th, because so many aspects of it were so odd. He didn't know how many of the victims were male and how many were female. He was very vague. He didn't know the caliber of the weapon with which they'd been shot. He said they'd all been shot with a long gun, meaning the Bushmaster 223 caliber rifle, with 3 to 11 wounds apiece. And that explained how they used photographs to show the parents. He claimed it was easier that way. Well, it turns out that Wayne Carver was a pivotal player in this entire event, as I'm going to explain. Me, of course, obviously, and I've already mentioned Sophia and Paul Preston and Wolfgang Halbig. So I had a simply stellar cast. I put together an article with a preface by Mike Palachek, a prologue by me giving an introduction and overview to the case, and 12 chapters divided into 3 parts. And then an afterword and an epilogue. And the afterword was Dennis on the Nexus of Tyranny, the afterword by Nick Kohlerstrom drawing analogies with the 7/7 London bombings. And then we had 4 appendices. First of all, Appendix A was the FEMA manual for the event. Then Appendix B, Nick Kohlerstrom, the 20 children in their homes, because there were so many anomalies, including that on this Christmas Eve 2009, a whole lot of these families received homes for no price at all. Then James Tracy had a massive timeline of Sandy Hook that runs about 125 pages. I thought that was too valuable to not include as Appendix C. And then finally, Appendix D, I discovered a Crime Prevention Research Center had done a study comparing murder and homicide rates before and after gun bans. And it turns out, David, that contrary to what Obama and other government officials have been telling us again and again, crime rates go up after gun bans, and it's for a very obvious reason. When only the criminals have guns, they don't have to worry about being confronted by civilians who have weapons, and they therefore commit more crimes. In fact, the whole gun control agenda, where this event appears to have been designed to produce a series of families, like 26, with impeccable credentials because they'd lost members of their family at Sandy Hook, to become lobbyists for gun control. And the entire thing is a complete and total scam. a complete and total scam that involved crucial roles being played by then Attorney General Eric Holder and even President Barack Obama himself.
That attorney there that Wolfgang has been battling with for a while, that Monty Frank, I mean, all anybody has to do is take a look at his position on gun control. I mean, he's almost like the poster child now of gun control. Pretty amazing that here this attorney who has so much power over the documents that Wolfgang has been trying to get, he is side by side with some of these notorious gun control characters.
Well, Dennis was reminding me that Gene Rosen, who claims that a bus stopped and let off five or six kids in front of his house, which is immediately adjacent to the firehouse, and that he took them in and gave them orange juice and to play with stuffed animals, which is a little much for first graders, frankly. That's more like kindergarten or earlier level. Before, you know, they started to tell him what had happened. He has a preposterous story because no bus driver is going to let off children at a home other than that of a parent or custodian, and Gene Rosen had no parental or custodial relationship with these children. He claimed to have heard gunshots coming from the school, but he did not call the police about it. I asked the FBI's former chief psychiatrist to evaluate what Gene Rosen had said during his interview, and he found it all completely incredible and made several of the points I've just made now. Gene Rosen turns out to be an actual member of the Screen Actors Guild, and Dennis Camino reminded me in a conversation we had yesterday that he actually has been a FEMA spokesman against gun control and has given many presentations on behalf of FEMA in the past, David.
There you go. Yeah, we spent quite some time across from the fire station and Rosen's house, and it just seems completely preposterous that based upon the actual lay of the land, the design of that road, and the position of that house in relation to the firehouse, and how much room there is in the firehouse, and that children would obviously go to a firehouse just like they would go to the police station if something was up, and Rosen's house being in the position that it is just ridiculous to think that the children would pass by the firehouse or the bus driver or anybody would pass by there to go to a complete stranger who really did nothing to figure out what was going on.
There's one absurdity after another. For example, officially laid up the children in the classrooms in a heap until they removed them in the dead of night. Now, that's completely absurd.
Right.
They ought to have been rushed in ambulances to hospitals where physicians could determine whether they were dead or alive. EMTs are not qualified to do that, but none of that actually ever happened. So you get one absurdity compounded by another, but when you have the full force of the media and the government behind you, it's very difficult to break through, even though there were a few notable exceptions in the national coverage on the 14th already. One national report said that the Bushmaster hadn't even been found in the school. Another said it appeared that Adam Lanza did not exist. But those reports were suffocated by all of the others.
Like your book is being suffocated now.
Well, it's very, very interesting, David. As you mentioned, the CreateSpace accepted the book as in conformity with their guidelines, and it was made available beginning on the 22nd of October. And began selling rather briskly. In fact, before it was banned by Amazon.com, which just happened this past Thursday, it had sold close to 500 copies in less than a month. Now, that meant it was on a trajectory to become a best-selling book. And I think that the series of events I'm going to recount to you was a way of plumbing how powerful a work this was by intelligence experts so they could make a determination what to do about it, which led to the decision to take the book down. When I inquired about it after receiving a formal notification, they could not tell me what those guidelines were that had been evaluated. So it's obvious to me what happened is they were directed to take down the book, and then they sent a temporizing statement that we violated some guidelines and say, look at their guidelines, and they have about a dozen that include, you know, no pornography and stuff like that, which this book does not violate, although I do regard the incident itself and the way it was presented to the people as a form of governmental pornography, because they were seeking, on the basis of a completely fabricated story of a young man shooting to death 21st graders, to instill fear into every parent in the country that something like that could happen, in order to make them more amenable to manipulation to promote the Obama administration's political agenda. That is precisely the objective of terrorism, Dave, which means that this book demonstrates that the Obama administration performed an act of terrorism on the American people.
Yeah, absolutely. So they notified you via an email saying that the book would come down, or did somebody else notify you?
Well, it happened in stages. On Wednesday, I was contacted by a woman named Allison Hall of King World, which is a news syndicate, who said that she was the story coordinator for a show called Inside Edition, and she gave me her address, 555 West 57th Street, Suite 1300, New York, New York, 10019, ahall@kingworld.com, and gave me her phone number. And I called her and she said they wanted to do a story about nobody died at Sandy Hook. So I thought that sounded like a great idea. I sent her back a response that I'll read to you. Allison, thanks for calling. The book is on Amazon.com, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. I am attaching the cover of the book and some of the more stunning results of our research involving a dozen contributors, six current or retired PhD professors, and other experts. Check out the back covers for some basic evidence that it was a drill. Exhibit 26 from Chapter 8 of the book shows the SWAT team present. The windows of Classroom 10 are not damaged. The flag is at full staff. Crime scene tape is up for a crime that has not yet been committed. And Wayne Carver is waiting for his tent. The next is the iconic photograph taken by Shannon Hicks, but there is another which reveals that they rearranged the kids to get a better shot. More strikingly, parents are present. Did someone during the shooting decide to call them to rush down to the massacre? Look at the image of the women lounging at the massacre, what you can see in the background. P.S. One more of the Nancy Lanza backroom with a moving pad under the leg. See jamesfetzer.blogspot.com for my latest about these very photographs. So I sent him six photographs, David, and the one is perhaps the single most stunning indictment of the entire event because you have the SWAT team vehicle present just above the roof of the SWAT team. You could see the four windows in the row of Classroom 10, where the second from the left in particular would be all shot out when the event went down. You can see the flag at full mast. You can see the crime scene tape already up. You can see Wayne Carver waiting there. This was so absurd that I even created a separate little video about it, an hour show I did entitled Sandy Hook, starring Wayne Carver as the medical examiner, where I do a series of close-ups so you can see that it definitely is Wayne Carver. And then I included the original Shannon Hook's iconic photograph sent around the world, the second photograph, which Shannon Hicks has acknowledged having taken, and then some close-ups of the parents there showing that in the background of the string of kids there are two other parents who are lounging at the massacre. In addition, I sent him a photograph of the Nancy Lanza bedroom, where you can see very clearly there's some red on the bed, but it's not blood. It looks to me more like it might be raspberry jam. You can see a foot chest, and on the chest there's an evaluation pad. We find these in many of the photographs at the house, where they're keeping records of exactly how they were staging each of the rooms. And then this is a four-poster bed, and beneath the left front leg, there is a blue moving pad, which in their haste they forgot to remove. Now, one of the ironies of all of this, David, is that in the book, it would have been prohibitively expensive to publish these photographs in color. To make the book at a reasonable price, we priced it at $18.95. Amazon had it for $15 or even $14 before this calamity hit. And now it's available for free, and you can see every photograph in color. You can see in the Nancy Lanza bedroom that that's not blood on the bed. You can see the blue moving pad beneath the leg. So I think this is redounding in a way they simply did not anticipate. I also thought I should add one more photograph, which was the father of Jesse Lewis. Jesse Lewis's mother has written a book that supposedly they were reviewing, and when they noticed that in the upper right-hand corner, the three books above her book on Amazon was my book. So to get a contrast, they decided to pursue it. So I said, here's the father of Jesse, who's the child about whom the book you have cited was written. Jesse would have been six. But does his father look only 6 years older than he does in that photograph? We believe they use photos of children at earlier ages to create a fabricated impression about who died at Sandy Hook. And this is this classic photograph of Neil testifying before a congressional committee. And he's got this big photograph of him and Jesse, who's supposed to have died. Jesse is so young, less than a year old. You add 6 years to that. And then you say, well, does Neil look 6 years older only than in the photograph? And the fact is he looks 16 or maybe 20 years older than in the photograph. Sophia Smallstorm was the first to make that discerning observation. So I follow up. right? They're going to do this interview with me. I've sent them all this stuff, so they have a pretty good idea what's going on. And I wind up being interviewed, but not for a television program. I mean, I've been interviewed for plenty of television programs. You normally have the host introduces themselves, say, Dr. Fetzer, we're so glad to have you here. We're going to talk about your book. We have the images you've sent. Those are excellent. I'm going to do a brief intro of you. What should I say by way of a bio sketch and in introducing your book? None of that. Instead, I was looking into a very large room that didn't have the features of a television studio whatsoever, and a fellow comes up to me and doesn't even introduce himself and begins asking me questions. What justifies your attacking these families who lost children during the shooting? To which I replied, there's no proof that anyone died. One of the fathers sent a Sandy Hook student a copy of his son's death certificate, but it turned out to be a fabrication. If his son had actually died, we would have had a real one. I mean, that wasn't actually the first time he asked me that question. The very first time, he was being very repetitive. So why are you attacking these families who lost their children at Sandy Hook? Nobody died at Sandy Hook. There are contributions from 12 experts on Sandy Hook, including 6 current or retired professors with PhDs. The families made out like bandits, where each of them has received more than $1 million in donations. Who cares about PhDs? What gives you the right to intrude upon their grief? And the school district received $50 million to rebuild a school where the average cost of a K-4 school across the country is only $7 million. They received 7 times that. We have been to their homes. We have seen the funerals. They experienced real grief. They were closed casket, and we have no proof that anyone died. We have a mountain of evidence in a 425-page book, which is thorough, detailed, and copiously documented. What about the photograph of the children being evacuated from the school? What's your complaint about that? There's a second photograph which shows parents were present at the time, and in the second photograph, the kids have been rearranged. In one, the first child is a little girl wearing a pink sweater and a short skirt. In the other, a much larger little boy is wearing a dark shirt and blue jeans. And what are the parents doing there? Couldn't one of the kids run up and change their place in line? And wouldn't the parents, hearing that something was going on at the school, have wanted to rush down to see what was going on? But there would have not have been time for them to get there. There was an emergency evacuation during a shooting. There would have been no reason for them to have been there. And in the background, you can see some of the parents lounging at the massacre. Is that all you've got? Some kids who have rearranged themselves in a line? Is that it? No, we have the FEMA manual for a 2-day event, the sign everyone must check in, boxes of bottled water and pizza cartons, many wearing name tags on lanyards, parents bringing children to the scene. We even included it in the book. Couldn't the sign have been there for almost any event? Pizza cartons, is that all you've got? On the day they went live, we had no surge of EMTs into the building, no medevac chopper was called, no string of ambulances to the school, no evacuation of 469 other students. Is that the best you've got? No. We even have photographs from the evening before. The SWAT team is there. The windows of classroom 10 are undamaged. The flag is at full staff. Crime scene tape is up for a crime that is yet to be committed. And Wayne Carver is waiting for the arrival of his portable tent. That's a sample of about half of the interview, which I reconstructed immediately afterwards because I thought it was very important to blog about it. So I published a blog, my second most recent, which is entitled Inside Edition, does a hit piece. And I believed at the time, you know, I still lingered to the belief that this had been Inside Edition. I now believe Inside Edition was merely a cover for granting access to me. I believed then that it was Langley, that I was being transported into a big office at Langley. But I have, for someone in whom I have great confidence, a suggestion that this was actually done by the 411th Civil Affairs Battalion, which is a branch of the U.S. Army that conducts these kind of ops. And believe it or not, Dave, the 411th Civil Affairs Battalion is stationed in Danbury, Connecticut, which just happens to be the home of Danbury State's attorney, Stephen Sadensky, who wrote the final report, which I would now believe was actually authored by the 411th Civil Affairs Battalion, which completely, utterly fails to establish a causal nexus committee connecting the alleged shooter, Adam Lanza, with the victims he's supposed to have killed and the weapons he's alleged to have used. For example, the claim is that he shot his mother like 4 times with a .22 caliber rifle, 3 times in the eye and once in the head. But they don't have any fingerprints of Adam Lanza on the weapon. The only DNA they have, remarkably enough, related to a convicted felon from another state. Now, right by itself, that should have been enough to throw the whole issue up in the air. And when it comes to the 20 children and 6 adults, Sadensky reports that they have some over 150 slugs from the shooting scene and that they were unable to match any of the slugs with a weapon that was used. Now, that's just ridiculous. It means they got no way of connecting the alleged shooter with the alleged weapons or the alleged victims. I mean, it's just completely absurd. This has to be the most meaningless forensic investigation ever conducted of what is supposed to be a major crime. So, you know, I published about it, and then the following day, I was notified by Amazon.com or by CreateSpace, which is the subsidiary that actually published the book and was making it available on a print-on-demand basis, meaning each time they get an order, they print a copy and they would send it to the person purchasing it, that they had suppressed my book. I mean, that's the word they use, suppressed the book, and that I should review the guidelines for the book. But I knew they'd already passed the guidelines. The book had already been passed. It was passed and surveyed for its guidelines when it was first published on 22nd of October. So here you have nearly a month later, they're claiming this. I have no doubt, David, that this intel op was intended to plumb the depth of the evidence we had and that they concluded that the book was too good. And because it delegitimizes the Obama administration in relation to its gun control effort and exposes an elaborate charade, including a bunch of fake parents, fake teachers, the Newtown School Board, the Newtown Police Department, the Connecticut State Police, the medical examiner of the state of Connecticut, the governor and lieutenant governor of the state, right up to Eric Holder, the attorney general, who met with the governor just about 2 weeks in advance of the event. And I'm confident, as I've explained many, many times in many, many places, to apprise him that they were going to take an abandoned school, conduct a drill, and present it as a live event in order to promote gun control, which is exactly what they did. Consider this, too. If they have found in violation of the guidelines, then they must know what guidelines were violated. But even when I called CreateSpace to ask what guidelines had been violated, the customer service representative checked the file and said she could not tell me, but I'd hear from them in 2 working days. Well, that would be like Monday. Meanwhile, they interrupted the flow of purchase of the book, and they're going to run me around in circles over alleged violations of guidelines when it had already passed their guidelines. David, frankly, when I think back upon it, the last case I can recall vividly in my mind is the Pentagon Papers in 1971.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Do you know, besides that, and of course there was a book, and I interviewed the fellow who wrote that book, an Army guy, where the Pentagon bought a bunch of the books and burned them. Operation Darkheart, I was thinking of, that was Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. He wrote that book, and the Pentagon actually bought up as many as they could and burned it. So yeah. This is something very significant, Jim, here in the United States of America, where the First Amendment supposedly protects all forms of speech and words, not thought, of course, but not yet. To me, anyway, this ranks all the way up there with what you brought up, the Pentagon Papers, and this goes beyond Schaefer's book, Operation Darkheart. Where do you go from here?
Well, we're going to make the world aware of what has happened here. And I must say, I was very pleased to hear from you, Dave, that Deanna Spingola had been astonished by this development and that that's not good. The implications are terrible. In other words, if you disagree with a government version of anything, Amazon can remove your book. I must say that Deanna went up several notches in my estimation for having had that reaction, David, and I want to compliment her for that.
Yes, well, you know, she is a great researcher, as you are, and of course we were talking about, prior to this happening, I think we could still do it, having a debate between you and her, you with your book here, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, and her book about Sandy Hook, which we're going to try to organize still.
Well, I want you to know that I'm very appreciative that she had that reaction and that I am very happy to go forward with it. I don't believe if she's read all of my stuff that she's going to have a leg to stand on in attempting to defend that this was an authentic, bona fide, real event. But, you know, I appreciate her willingness. As you know, since you arranged them, I've debated several others who have been fanatic proponents of the reality of Sandy Hook and sought to denigrate those of us who have done so much research. We have nearly 80 reviews, David, when the book was taken down. That's a tremendous number. The Moon book, yes, for example, which I published about 6 months ago or so, includes discussion of the moon landing hoax, Paul McCartney's death and replacement, the first death of Saddam Hussein, the second death of Osama bin Laden, and the Holocaust. And in all that period of time, it only acquired 38 or 39 reviews. Here you had a book up less than a month, and it already had nearly 80, and they fell into a striking bimodal distribution because it had a whole host of five-star reviews from people who had actually read the book. And then it had a huge list of one-star reviews from people who had not, many of whom openly admitted they didn't read it, they didn't believe it, they thought we were sick for publishing such a book, Amazon should never allow it to happen. Yeah. And I was therefore recounting what Amazon had done with this book and what was going on here, gave samples, which you can't find now because when they took down the book, they obliterated. Obliterated the whole website. They've erased all the reviews, all the controversy, all the comments. Some of these reviews had a very large number of comments on them, David, which, of course, I am with you. This is a stunning event in American history. We have nailed them to the wall, and it's not surprising when you have, you know, highly qualified experts of the kind that I featured here. I mean, people don't understand the reason I cite the PhD is a research degree. The PhD indicates you're capable of undertaking original, sustained research in a designated area or discipline. And you get six PhDs working on this case, not to mention a half a dozen other experts, one of whom is Alan William Powell, who produced these hundreds of photographs that are as devastating as any evidence we have. And it's ludicrous to suggest that one of us is just lost his mind, that we're making this up. It's an edited book. I have a vast amount of experience editing books. I've probably edited, 15 to 20 books. So when I get around to editing a book, I know what I'm doing, and I'm very thorough and painstaking, and this book is copiously documented. It's thoroughly and painstakingly constructed, and every aspect of it is mutually reinforcing. And what's fascinating is that you had so many independent experts arriving at converging conclusions about the hoax and producing the evidence they had unearthed in the course of their investigations.
Yeah, and of course, that might be why they shut it down, to kill the momentum. Because if you had 80 in a month, then obviously on course to perhaps go viral. And that's what they do, I notice, that when certain videos are put up, they'll kill them for no reason. And that, of course, makes you think, hey, wait a second, is this just Amazon.com? Is this just one little company? Why would they throw away the money? Or is there somebody else involved?
Jeff Bezos is a Bilderberger. I mean, this is really outrageous. There's a Zionist influence all over. I'd had the experience with Wikipedia after I participated in a conference on academic freedom, are there limits to inquiry, JFK, 9/11, and the Holocaust. I discovered that my Wikipedia entry, which had been very extensive, lots of stuff about my research on JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, and responses to allegations of anti-Semitism, which had no foundation whatsoever, because when you unearth evidence that Israel was complicit in the events of 9/11, criticizing the actions and policies of the government of Israel is not being anti-Semitic. To be anti-Semitic is to attack or discount some individual on the basis of their ethnic origins or their religious orientation. I have never done that. It is not in me. But the Israeli government has committed many of these false flag attacks. In fact, it's part of the history of the creation of Israel when in 1946, for example, an Ergun gang of terrorists dressed as Arab blew up the King David Hotel to drive the British out of Palestine. And that was led by a man who would become one of the first prime ministers, Menachem Begin, who's had some very troubling things to say about his belief in Jewish superiority and his contempt for other races, which he likened to be as different from Jews as cattle,
yeah,
from human beings.
But where are the haters, right, Jim?
But where are the haters? The haters are all on the other side.
Yeah,
you know, there's an irony here too, David, because DNA research at Johns Hopkins and other institutions has discovered that the present occupants of Israel are not descended from the tribe of Judea, but are Khazars from the Khazarian region of the Ukraine or are of European origin. Because the Semite classification is linguistic, the largest group of Semites in the Middle East are the Arabs. The Palestinians are Semites. The Israelis are not, which means the Israelis are actually the greatest practitioners of anti-Semitism in the world today.
Yeah, that's right. All I got to say is one thing about that, Jim. Oy vey.
David, you just happen to have the first of what's going to be quite a string of interviews about this. I'm very pleased because you have been so thoughtful about arranging debates in the past, and I anticipate we'll go forward with a debate with Deanna Spingola, whom, as I have observed, has gone up several notches in my estimation for deploring the banning of this book on the ground that it indicates that if you disagree with the government version of anything, Amazon can remove your book. That is completely despicable because the banning of books in American history is so rare. That means this book is going to be studied in every journalism class in the country in the future.
That's the way it should be. And as I've said many times in the past, the government has a great way to create activists. And they have a great way to bring things to the fore that they want suppressed. So, Jim, I want to thank you for all the time you've spent here. And thank you for giving me this first shot here at this, because I know this is going to go all over the place. And it's very similar to Wolfgang, because it was your interview that you did with Wolfgang when it was revealed that he was visited by the Lake County Sheriff there, that I interviewed him. And of course, that interview went viral. And hopefully this is going to take off and people are going to see what the government is up to and how they want to shut you down.
That's right, David. I was very glad to introduce you to Wolfgang and arrange for you to do that interview, which had such a positive impact. May the same be true of this.
Yes. Jim Fetzer, again, thanks so much for the time you spent. And Jim, looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
My great pleasure, Dave. Thanks so much.